When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, what's going on, Giants fans? Welcome to the latest episode of our Talk is Cheap podcast from the Star Ledger, NJ Advanced Media, NJ.com. It's Wednesday evening right now. Daryl Slater here with you. Bob Brookover on the other side of the glass, such as it were, to borrow the Steve Summers line. So obviously everyone knows Giants 1-5. Daniel Jones didn't play in Buffalo. They've lost four straight games. Season's pretty much over. Only three teams have started 1-5 and made the playoffs. Obviously, different situation now with 17 regular season games, seven teams in the playoffs. But anyway, the Giants have a big hill to climb, clearly. Their offense is a mess. Brian Daboll is not changing play callers. He's going to let Mike Kafka supposedly still call the plays. And yeah, and it's not clear if Daniel Jones will return Sunday. He was a limited participant in practice today here, Wednesday. Let's not make too much of that just yet. He has to be cleared for contact. You know, football is a contact sport. Unless you're talking about the dumb version they're going to play in the Olympics. Bob, I think, you know, we can kind of talk about where the Giants are at, but also, you know, we could spend some time here talking about how they make the most of these final 11 games.
Me here, you there.
There you go.
To keep with our Steve Summers theme. There are a lot of things, you know, that they can do to make this season not a waste, but one of them, you know, it's not going to be the playoff season that so many hope for, which, you know, if you're a Giants season ticket holder, has to be devastating. You're about to go to your third game, your team's 1-5. And the first two performances, your team got outscored 64-3. But now you got a third game, and, you know, you still want to see a team that heads in the right direction for the rest of the season. And also, bigger than that even, is you want to see especially young players who have a future here show that they are capable of being good, solid NFL players. And in a lot of ways, you know, not just them, but you're also looking at a Daniel Jones. You got decisions to make about free agents. You got trade deadline stuff to deal with here in the next couple of weeks. But most important on that list, I think, is how young the young players look for the final 11 games of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear the Giants are not ready to take the next step into like this legit contender status. I mean, since they beat the Vikings in the playoffs last year, they're 0-6 against playoff caliber teams. You know, they also beat the Cardinals, who are terrible, and they needed an epic second half comeback to do that. So they didn't get blown out for a change in Buffalo. They did lose, obviously, you know, and they were playing Tyrod Taylor, backup quarterback, so that plays into it. But the schedule, and as you wrote earlier this week, starts to ease up a little bit. Granted, the Giants are a team that struggled, right? So you can't assume any wins, but back-to-back home games next 2 weeks against Washington and the Jets. Then they go to Vegas to play the Raiders. Then a challenging one, of course, in Dallas. And then at Washington and versus New England, versus meaning at home, before the bye week. So after a gauntlet of the first six games where they played four of those games on the road, and five of those six were against tough teams, and three of those five were on the road. The Giants here now in these next six games, you know, you look at it and say, obviously, some of the Jets are pretty good. The Commanders, I mean, none of these teams, you're not talking about the Panthers, but out of these next six, like, you only look at one and say, like, hard to see them winning in Dallas. The other five, like, if you could say winnable, I think they're winnable. But that's where they're at right now. And like you said, I mean, it's not so much about the wins and losses. Like, obviously, if they string together six wins, wow, okay. But it's about seeing this what might be your core or like your foundation start to play better against some of these teams where you'd think they should start to play better against them.
Yeah, I mean, that's really a big part of it. And, you know, at least the defensive side of the ball can right now, especially after that Buffalo game, say they're heading in the right direction. And I don't think it's just the Buffalo game. I mean, if you go back to the Seattle game, you know, that game was the defense really allowed 14 points in that game. They gave up a ton of yards against the Dolphins, so it's hard to give them too much credit for that game. But they got three takeaways in that game and, you know, only, we say, but gave up 31 points to the Dolphins, who are routinely scoring I'm just going to say mass quantities, which makes me think of an old Saturday Night Live skit of the Coneheads drinking beer, mass quantities of beer. But, you know, the Dolphins score will. So, I mean, the defense has shown signs. And even the 49ers game, they weren't horrendous. They gave up a lot of yards, but they gave up 30 points to a really good team. You know, so but then against the Bills, they played a really, really solid game. They got two takeaways there. They held the Bills under 300 yards, you know, and made Josh Allen have a really difficult game. It might have been Josh Allen's worst game since opening day against the Jets. You know, when he had three interceptions in that game. So, I mean, if you're looking for things, bright spots, and there's not many bright spots when you're 1-5, but the defense and specifically some individuals on that defense, with Bobby Okereke being at the top of the list, he looks like an impactful linebacker that the Giants had hoped to sign when they signed him. And yeah, I'm going to write about tomorrow about Micah McFadden, who kind of came along. He was in the right place, right time on Sunday. For two turnovers, the first two takeaways of his career. But also, in addition to that, played a very good game. Besides just the two takeaways, had the best PFF score and an 87.9 grade, which was the best of his career. So, you know, there are signs for the defense. The offense, on the other hand, obviously they didn't have Daniel Jones on Sunday, but they haven't scored a touchdown since the third quarter of the game against the 49ers. We're going... You know, that's three games plus without a touchdown, and you're not going to win any games in the NFL doing that.
Yeah, definitely not. And so we can just hit the defense a little bit here, because we'll get to all the offensive stuff and all the problems. But, like, yeah, I think that there are certainly some glimmers with young guys on this defense. And as you go through this list of guys with sort of a forward-looking thing here in terms of, you know, look, it's before Halloween. It's still 13 days to Halloween. And the season's over. Like, okay, so, like, we're not going to sit here and, like, go nitpicking the Tyrod Taylor play and should that have been pass interference. Like, it's however many days after the game, folks, quite frankly, who cares? Okay, they lost the game. They're 1-5. You know, we're not going to go down the rabbit hole of that or, like, the end of the first half. Okay, well, does that reflect on coaching? Yeah, maybe it was a screw-up. Okay, but they lost the game. The last 11 are really about looking – toward next season, unless they somehow find a way to win go 8-3. They're not going 8-3. The only way they're in the playoff mix is if they go 8-3, period. End of story. Not happening. Okay. So as you look at this defense, you listed a couple guys who I think are intriguing. I mean, Okereke will obviously be back. Mikey McFadden shown some value, but as we go down the list here, it'll be really interesting to see how they build around Dexter Lawrence. And obviously they're not going to invest like big money or a big pick into that D line. I think they're going to wind up letting Leonard Williams walk. I doubt they can trade him. His salary is $18 million. They're not going to be able to move that. And then, like, in terms of their other guys up front, like, they need to figure out, is Kayvon Thibodeau an impact player the rest of the year? Number one. Number two, Azeez Ojulari can't stay healthy. So at what point do they just decide they've got to do something else there in terms of bringing someone else there? What are your thoughts on where the defensive front stands? Because we kind of touched on the linebackers there a little bit. What about the guys further up front there?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you that Leonard's probably in his last days of a Giant, as a Giant. I mean, not necessarily going to get traded, because it'd be very hard to trade with that contract. But I think he's in his last season as a Giant. I'd be surprised if he wasn't. It's a little scary, bit of a scary thought to think about, though, because he's still playing at a pretty high level. He's not at the same level as Dex, but he's playing at a pretty high level still. So, you know, if you get rid of him, you better have somebody you think is ready to step up and be an impact player at that position. I'm not sure that person's on the roster right now. D DJ Davidson, I think, in a spot role has played pretty well. But, you know, then he missed a game with his knee. His knee acted up a little bit last week. I talked to him actually today, and he said he's fine, and he was a full participant back in practice. So, but he's somebody interesting to watch here for the last 11 weeks. Can he go from being, you know, just a guy to maybe having more of an impact? You know, the two guys they brought in, Nunez Roches, and who signed beyond this year, he's going to be around, and A'shaun Robinson, whose snaps are dwindling some. You know, I would say Nacho will be around, but probably not A'shaun Robinson.
Yeah.
Looking at the defensive line. And, you know, I'll go back to your Kayvon. Yeah, can Kayvon have an impact? But he's going to be around. We know that.
Yep.
They are so thin after that at that position. You know, I don't know. You know, they need to draft, sign a free agent. I haven't really looked at either one of those things too deeply yet. I'm sure we're going to, in these future weeks coming up, start looking at those things more deeply. But, you know, they're so paper thin at that position.
And Ojulari can't stay healthy. I mean, the guy had an encouraging rookie year, but he, ever since he got hurt in the joint practice with the Jets, they were running sprints after practice. He hurt his calf, and he's been just snake bitten by injuries ever since. He played 7 games last year, so he missed 10. He has played 3 of the 6 so far this year. He went on IR. I can't remember when, but whatever. You know, you're gonna got to miss at least 4 games at least with IR. You know, that doesn't guarantee you're coming back after 4. So, yeah, I mean, 17 played the full season as a rookie, had 8 sacks, pretty encouraging. But and had a nice batting average last season in terms of effectiveness, 5.5 sacks in 7 games, but has not done anything since. I mean, you talk about like the guys who have been their best defensive players. I mean, right now, Dexter Lawrence, PFF wise, far and away their best guy at 90.6. We'll say 90 is his grade, and pass rush, he's at 86. And since we're talking about the guys up front, like Leonard Williams, not a great grade. He's 68. He's actually not great against the run, usually pretty good against the run, but 61 against the run, but he's actually an 88. In pass rush. So he's having a really good pass rush year. 21 pressures for Lawrence, 13 for Leonard Williams. Thibodeau has 16 and 4 sacks, but these are PFF numbers. But they have him only at a 59 in pass rush. So what's that saying is he's not efficient.
And what's his run defense grade?
And his run defense is 35. So, yeah. And they have him defending the run a lot. So his overall grade is 44 right now. If you look at his total snaps, he has 325 total snaps, Thibodeau, and 135 of those are as a run defender, 161 pass rush. So he's being asked to defend the run a lot and not doing it particularly well is what that tells you. So if they want him to be this all-around linebacker and he wants to be that guy, we're not seeing it. We're not seeing it yet right now. So, you know, at what point does that become concerning?
The other thing, to go back to the pass rush for a second, though, and this goes back to a conversation I had with Andre Patterson, our defensive line coach, last week, which was I found it fascinating that, you know, he said this. We were talking about the Miami game. They hadn't played the Buffalo game yet, obviously. But talking about the Miami game, and he, you know, and Dex and Leonard came off the field and said to him, the offensive linemen from the Dolphins are saying, we're not going to let you wreck this game. I mean, which essentially means they're like the third and fourth guy. You know, it's like Aaron Judge and in the middle of a batting order. We're not going to let Aaron Judge beat us, but we're not going to let you guys wreck this game.
Pitch around them.
And that means from a pass rush standpoint, they're, you know, and they're just so thin on the edges pass rush wise, that, you know, why would you let the two guys who can wreck the game? You know, so that's a problem. And having said all that, they did play good defense. An interesting thing about Sunday's game, I thought, from a pass rush standpoint, was they didn't blitz the way they normally do, and were more effective playing. And I found that particularly interesting because I just happened to be watching, you know, it was a Sunday night game, so the pregame shows were on. And, you know, usually we don't get to watch the pregame shows because we're driving to the stadium or we're at the stadium. And Rex Ryan, of all people, said this about Wink, who's, you know, obviously good, really good buddy. He said, Wink, stop blitzing. It's not working.
Wow.
So
yeah.
It was a very
that's remarkable.
And then he did, which I'm interested. We talk to Wink tomorrow, Wink and the coordinators tomorrow. So I will definitely ask him about that comment.
Yeah, and of course, for people who don't know, he's buddies with Rex, but more so Rob Ryan. He actually worked alongside. I don't know if they ever worked together. Yeah, I think they did, but they go way, way back to like when Wink was like starting out in coaching and Rob Ryan was starting out. We're talking about like to the 90s. They used to go on college recruiting trips together. Anyway, so he's known the Ryan family and especially Rob, but clearly Rex too. And they come from that same aggressive mindset, school of thought. And so to hear Rex Ryan say that, that's something. So yeah, look, I mean, they need to be more obviously effective in every way. Like, I mean, if you look again, PFF's not gospel, but look, this team is 29th in defense right now. And against the run, they're 27th. They haven't improved there. And in terms of pass rush, they're 21st. The team that blitzes as much as they do should be better than that. And as we move into the back end of this defense, they're 26th in coverage. So they're not doing like they're 1-5 for a reason. Obviously, they're not doing much of anything right. So as you look at the secondary, Tay Banks will be back as one outside corner. Then who knows? Like, goodness gracious. I mean, like, Trey Hawkins will be around, but like, is he, you know, maybe he's not all these cracked up to. What was he actually cracked up to be? He was a 6th round pick, but he had a good camp.
Right, right. I mean, and he, you know, he kind of burst onto the scene when we not expected him to. I'm not sure he expected himself to burst onto the scene the way he did.
Played well, obviously.
Quiet guy, right. Now he's not having near the impact he has. And you know, all of a sudden Cordell Flott has come more into the picture. But he had, you know, for the guys we talked about who just had good games, Cordell Flott had a 41.4 grade on Sunday, including, 52.6 or 52.5 in coverage. 40.3 against the run, 35.7 tackling. There's no consistency from any of those guys. I think, you know, the eye test with Deonte Banks is that, you know, he's going to get better as he plays more.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you can say that about anybody else in that secondary among the young guys.
Banks played well in San Francisco, well in Miami. He did not play well in Arizona or Buffalo. It's early. Rookie cornerback, it's really hard. But you talk about five positions in the secondary, two outside corner, a slot corner, and your two safeties. It's a possibility that the Giants are looking at new starters at every single one of those spots. I mean, they're not committed to Jason Pennock. He's an interesting young player. Xavier McKinney, we addressed that in a post week ago. I mean, they could theoretically trade him, or he could wind up leaving in free agency, whether they like quote unquote will let him walk, or you know, he just gets monster money elsewhere, whatever. And then what, you know, we'll see what they do with the other cornerbacks. But I think Jackson is probably gone too. His salary, I think, is $11 million. So I could foresee a situation where they maybe try to trade him. I don't know about that though. I mean, he's an older player. He's got a little bit of a neck thing going on right now. Like, how has he played this year? Not great. He's got a 37 coverage grade. So he has not played well. So I don't see him back, but I also don't see him traded. I talked to him in the locker room today. He said he would be upset if he was traded. And just looking at completely objectively, like, why would a team trade for him at this point with the way he's playing? Nothing against him personally, good guy, good leader, but that's the reality of it. And so this secondary needs some, look, they drafted Deonte Banks this year because they want him to be their number one corner. So clearly they're not going to probably bring back Adoree Jackson in that role. Right. So, they need to figure out, can they build around Banks, and what do they do with McKinney? Do they bring him back or not? Right.
Those are two guys. Yeah. I would be surprised if they didn't bring back McKinney. I really would. I think Wink, you know, my impression is that Wink really likes McKinney. And he's a solid player. He had a really good year 2 years ago, and that led us to believe he was going to have a great year last year, which he didn't. And then on top of that, he had the the hand thing on the vacation to Cabo. But he's come back and played at a pretty high level again this year.
Yeah, I mean, you look at what he's done. 70 coverage, 71 defense, 67 against the run. He's tackling well, 72 tackles, 68 pass rush. They don't pass rush him really at all, but there you go. So he's played pretty well. He's played well. Simmons has played well. Okereke's played well. So that kind of covers the defense. And you know, look, I mean, we're done to give you a whole offseason preview. This is sort of all couched in the, this is what we need to see in the final 11 games. Like they need to figure out, okay, what do they have in Jason Pinnock? What do they have in Cordell Flott? What do they have in, Darnay Holmes is gone. We know that. What do they have in Trey Hawkins? Maybe Nick McLeod. These type of guys who they need to see what they can be. Obviously Bobby McCain signing. I mean, what a pointless signing that was. The guy is not even active. What do they have against, what do they have from Dane Belton? So these are some interesting young, we talk a lot about the, you know, Thibodeau and what they need to see from Barkley and McKinney on the stretch, but these like mid-tier guys are interesting evaluations too. And I would put Micah McFadden in quote, the quote unquote mid-tier non-sexy group, but it's an important evaluation. I mean, sure. you're not necessarily evaluating Okereke on the stretch, but because you know he's gonna be back, but these are the other guys who you're like, right. This
Pinnock's
is
in there, Pinnock's in there too, and Pinnock's a guy who I think could be definitely be in their future plans. You know, this is really his first chance to first season to be a starter. And he's obviously, he got off to a rough start, but he's come on in recent weeks and played better. Obviously had an incredible 102 yard return against the Dolphins, but then he followed that up with a solid performance against the Bills. And, you know, and part of growing in this league is you got to take your lumps. You're going to take your lumps. And that was the long thing I had to talk with McFadden, and he talked about it in training camp too, about, you know, learning his rookie year was so difficult. And just, you know, as times it felt like his head was spinning because there was just so much to absorb. And even went to the part where he was talking about not just like what he was learning on the field, but he's like, I laughed about a conversation because I had just started on the job. We had a conversation. I asked him about how much he had learned from Blake Martinez. And 2 days later, Blake Martinez was gone. He's like, yeah, that's the first time. I was like, I always heard, yeah, the NFL is a business. The NFL is a business. Like, wow, it really is a business. You know, that he was gone. And now Micah McFadden was being thrust into a more prominent role than he really thought he would be at that early stage. And he took his lumps last year. And he's taken some this year, but you know, guys, I think people do forget, and it's true in every professional sport. Young players, they get better. A lot of them get better. If they don't, they disappear. And that happens a lot too, but the guys do improve all the time in professional sports. Once they get, and the term they always use is the game slows down for them. And that's, you know, they talk about it in every sport where, you know, everything, it's just such an elite level of competition that until you really get into it, you don't understand exactly what it is. But then when you do, if you're good enough, you get better.
Yeah. So there are plenty of those mid-level, like I said, and you know, not to knock these guys playing mid-level, but you're talking about Kayvon Thibodeau. Okay. He's number 5 overall pick, you know, but, for all those guys, there's guys like Micah McFadden and Pinnock that they need to figure out, can we kind of sort of build a defense around these guys, or do we need to go out and try to draft a guy or sign a guy? So that's, you know, they talk about self-scouting, whatever, in these final 11 games, that's what the Giants front office is going to be doing a lot of while the coaching staff tries to scrap and win. And we talk, I think you mentioned it, like, I think Wink Martindale will be back. I think the guys who could lose their jobs, you know, and again, this is not, we're not speculating necessarily lightly. We understand this, but it's part of the deal. You know, it's a results business. Thomas McGahee, Bobby Johnson, these are the type of guys who could, they could, I think, move on from. They're not firing Dable after this year. You know, he's going to be in the hot seat probably entering next year, depending on how poorly the rest of this thing goes. If they turn it around, maybe not. But it's looking like it's heading in that direction. So you can kind of assume as you're evaluating these players that they're going to be coming back into the same offensive and defensive systems, which obviously that continuity helps. You can't be, as Leonard Williams said the other day, when I was talking in the locker room, he's like, you can't be firing a coach every 2 years. Well, that's what the Giants have done with their last three coaches. I don't see it happening here.
That's been the blueprint.
Yeah. So that's, and it's not, it's a terrible,
or should we say the big blueprints?
Yeah. Oh. And so, like, as you look at this offense, we'll start with Daniel Jones, because we talked at the top about how he's limited today. Let's assume he misses another game. He's got this neck thing. It's supposedly not as serious as the last time. The whole idea that they're not still evaluating this guy is poppycock. I mean, like, they need to, first of all, the GM didn't draft him, right? Yes, they signed him to it's not 160. Like, let's stop with the 40 million a year. It's $82 million over 2 years. That is the contract. Forget every single cent beyond the next 2 years. If they don't like him by the end of 2024, they're putting him curbside. Okay. So, let's think about it like this. What if the Giants win two games this year, the rest of this year? Now, regardless of whether he comes back or a lot of it is like, okay, what if he misses the rest of the year? It doesn't seem like that's going to be the case based on what Brian Daboll says. But how long could he be out? How many games do they lose? Where are they picking the draft? They're currently fifth, but that's going to change, obviously. Do you draft a quarterback next year? I don't think they will. But Joe Shane entering a hot seat year potentially in 2024, does he want to wait until 2025 to draft a quarterback? Will he even be around to draft a quarterback if they're horrible again next year? Like, there's so many factors here that you have to talk about.
I guess part of that depends on what he thinks of the 2024 quarterback class. And as fate would have it, he was at the USC Notre Dame game over the weekend watching, who knows? I'm sure he was watching many things besides a quarterback, but Caleb Williams is obviously one of the top quarterbacks projected in the draft, and he threw three interceptions and his team got lost its first game that night and got beat up pretty good, 48-20 by Notre Dame. So, I don't know. You don't judge a guy on one game, but obviously Joe Shane had to walk away from that saying, I think he said this. He talked about it last year when he was watching some games early on, when they really didn't know whether Daniel Jones was going to be their quarterback the following year, and watched some miserable games. He said, I walked out of the stadium, come on, Daniel.
It's kind of the devil, I mean, they know this guy, not to say he's Satan, obviously I'm not likening to Satan, but this is an expression, of course, but they know how this guy can handle the system. Is he an elite quarterback? Like, we just haven't seen it yet because he's played behind a terrible line. He's been hurt again. All the things, rinse and repeat. But at some point, every quarterback has got to elevate the guys around him. So is he going to come back when he comes back and elevate the guys around him? Is the line going to give him a fighting chance? He can't be pressured 46, 47% of the time. So it has to start there. If he has a fighting chance, is he going to elevate the semi-flawed roster around him? That's what I think it has to come down to the rest of this year. But again, it's a two-year probably evaluation unless the things go haywire and they draft a quarterback next year. But I think it's worth noting that being bold, and I wrote a whole story about this with Howie Roseman going to Super Bowl last year. Guy, I think you talked to Joe Banner about it. Being bold pays off, especially at the quarterback position. Everyone said when they drafted Jalen Hurts, what in the world are you doing? You already have Carson Wentz. Well, Carson Wentz is hunting helpless animals with an AR-15 right now and having the time of his life, I'm sure. But while Jalen Hurts is playing great, an MVP candidate.
Absolutely. I mean, Howie Roseman's done that in several different ways as the Eagles GM, and it's paid off. If Daniel Jones does not show the Giants what they want to and need to see from him this year, and you think there's a quarterback, and you see it all the time with teams. I mean, actually, Sam Howell's a good example. You don't have to draft a quarterback in the first round and necessarily have him become your guy. He went in the fifth round. Sometimes you find them all over the draft, and even if the Giants don't take a quarterback I personally thought they should have taken a quarterback in the later rounds in this last draft. They didn't end up doing that. But I could definitely see a scenario where the Giants take a quarterback somewhere in next year's draft. And, not only based on what Daniel Jones is doing, but also, Tyrod Taylor's in the last year of his contract. He's probably not coming back as the backup quarterback. So, in a lot of ways, you would rather have a young quarterback. That was one of the things that surprised me when I got on the beat last year was like, why did the Giants, who nobody thought was going to the playoffs last year, spend so much money on a backup quarterback? It was a weird thing to me. I'm glad they did, because I really enjoyed covering Tyrod Taylor and talking to him. He's a guy with a lot of good insight into the NFL and into what it's like to be an NFL player. But it just seemed like a weird thing they did. And I think going forward next year, they're probably better off having, even if it's their backup, being a guy, a younger guy, not rather than a veteran.
And then, of course, is the line. Then, like, we've been through it a million times, and Dave Gettleman did a bad job. Joe Shane also has done a bad job. So, the line is hurt. Guys are hurt. Justin Pugh is playing, probably left tackle. Like, there's so many different permutations they've gone through with this line. Quite frankly, it matters, but like, I don't need to hear, the Justin Pugh thing. Okay, it's a fun story, but the guy is not a long-term solution for them. So to me, like, if I'm a forward-looking, if I'm a Giants fan and I'm forward-looking, like, I don't really care that much about the fact that Justin Pugh is involved. No offense to him. He seems like a delightful guy, but like,
I do want to just interject right one thing here. Yeah. He probably shouldn't even be the short-term solution that it got to that. I looked this up today, and I probably could have taken it farther, but I was like, this will be enough. This will suffice. So the top 10 graded guys in PFF right now, I looked at their weights and averaged them out. Their average weight, the top weight, I think, is Jordan Mailata at 375 pounds. But the average weight of the 10 top 10 guys grades in PFF is 329 pounds. And we asked Justin Pugh what he weighed last week, and he said 292 pounds. It's crazy to have a left tackle at 290. Division III schools don't have left tackles at 292 pounds anymore. Yes, it is what it is, as they say, but it's not anything relevant to what the future of the Giants is.
So as you look at the line here, they have two guys who are going to be back next year for sure. And John Michael Schmidt's the center, and the jury's still out on him. Who knows? But either way, he's dealing with the shoulder thing right now. Sounds like it's not season ending. He's not an IR candidate, according to Brian Daboll, which is encouraging for the Giants. Same with Andrew Thomas. They're not putting him. They didn't put him on IR yet.
They could have.
At some point, yeah, in retrospect, they could have or should have. But he did have the setback in practice, which kind of derailed the plans a little bit. So he'll be back, of course, to left tackle. And, smart for him to have gotten that contract this summer. But the other spots, like Evan Neal looks like a bust right now at right tackle. So they need to figure out the rest of the way what they have in him and whether they're going to do something there. Obviously, Matt Parrott is hurt. He's just hasn't worked out. And they drafted Marcus McKeith in a guard in the fifth round last year. Mixed results so far. Of course, Mark Lewinsky is not going to be around next year as a guard. Shane Lemieux, I don't think, will be around next year. Who knows on Ben Bredesen? He's a younger guy. But do they view him as a long-term? So you're not going to be able to go out and spend big money or big draft picks on three spots in the line. At some point, I think you're going to look at this and there's probably going to be like one spot at least next year where there's a big question mark. That the thing they need to get to is where there's not three or four spots that are question marks, which is the case, which was the case going into this year. They had questions all over the line. And then a lot of those guys got hurt, which like just destroyed everything. And the fact that Josh Azudu was your first option to play left tackle is just reflects so poorly on the state of their roster. And now he potentially might be out for the year with a toe injury. I talked to him today in the locker room. He's just so down and so discouraged about how this whole, this is, I can't even remember a worse 3-week stretch for an NFL player. he played poorly against Seattle and was crying in the locker room afterwards. In Miami, he played poorly again. He gave up a sack on which Daniel Jones got hurt and was crying again in the locker room. And in one of the all-time stand-up guy moments, the guy sat there and answered questions from reporters. I mentioned it last week. It's worth mentioning again. You know, he deals with a stutter. He's had a horrible experience 2 weeks in a row on the field. And he's crying and answering, stayed and answered. It was a really admirable thing that he did. And then, of course, last week he hurts his toe, and just like a freak accident, his toe gets caught. So they drafted him in the third round last year, and they still don't really know what they have in him. He didn't play a snap of guard at all this year, so he was drafted to be a guard. So they have to Joe Shane has to figure out how to figure this out on the line.
Yeah, I mean, and to me, I go back to, Evan Neal being the biggest one that need to figure out. That's a disaster if the seventh overall pick in the draft can't play. Because now you do need to go get another right tackle, whether it's via free agency or the draft, but. If he doesn't show signs of improvement by the end of this season, and right now you wonder how he's going to do that, because right now he's playing banged up, with an ankle injury. He didn't practice today. And, you know, when that happens, it rarely gets better by playing, you know. So, that part of it, they're going to have to consider what they want to do with the two guards. They're obviously going to look at John Michael Schmitz beyond this year, and getting Andrew Thomas healthy is also a huge thing. You know, Brian Daboll's answer today was he's getting better. He's rehabbing now with the trainers. You can say what you want, he's getting better, but it's not encouraging me. He's not on the practice field on Wednesday. That means he's not playing Sunday if he's not on the practice field Wednesday, and he's just starting to work with the trainers. And that kind of tells me you can forget about him this week and next week now. At some point they get him back. You know, at some point you get Andrew Thomas back, and then maybe you start to put together some semblance of the offensive line you hope to have at the beginning of the season. But I'm not even sure what that is anymore. Because we've seen so many variations of it, they started the season with Mark Lewinsky at right guard, and he's since the season started, he started two games at right guard with big gaps in between the two starts, one game at left guard and three games on the bench. So, but that was that was the guy you chose for opening day to be your starter. Who beat out Azudu supposedly. Bredesen is not a center. You know, he's had to play more center because of Schmitz, and he's played more center now than left guard. But that's not the answer there. There's just, as you said at the top of the discussion about the offensive line, it's a mess, and it's the thing that needs to be fixed. Until they fix that, you know, all the other things don't matter. You know, good teams, great teams have great offensive lines or very good offensive lines or quarterbacks that can, you know, do things that mask some of the problems on the offensive line. And I think Daniel Jones can be a good quarterback behind a good offensive line, but I don't think he's the guy who masks a lot of problems for a bad offensive line.
Bingo. Well said. I mean, the Giants are the last overall team in PFF's ratings right now. They have like a 54-6 grade. The Panthers are 60.2 and they haven't won a game. So the Giants are last by far. A big reason, of course, is that they're last in offense. They are last in pass blocking. They are probably not last in run blocking. Nope, they're last in run blocking too. Honest to God, I had no idea. So injuries have played into that. You know, this is a familiar script for Giants fans. They've seen their offensive line just be atrocious during this whole 2017 to 2021 stretch. Why they tied the Jets for the worst record in the NFL over that stretch. That's why they had horrible starts. 1-8 in 2017, 1-7 in 2018, 2-11 in 2019. Then they go 1-7 in 2020, 1-5 in 2021. Now they're 1-5 again. after last year's 6-1/7-2 start. So it's what are they? I don't know. What is that old political phrase? It's the whatever. It's the economy stupid. It's the offense stupid, or it's the offensive line stupid, or whatever. That's a dumb joke. But
Not bad. I'll give it a 6.6.
Look, that's they have 30 outside of the second half in Arizona. Their offense, I don't even have to look this up because I've written it so many times. Their offense has scored 33 points in 11 halves outside of the second half in Arizona. That is one touchdown with an extra point missed and 9 field goals. So 27 points through field goals, 6 for the touchdown. 33 points in 11 halves outside of the second half in Arizona. They've gone 205 minutes without an offensive touchdown of game time, obviously, not 205 minutes ago from when we're recording this. But yeah, look, I mean, the 3+ games without an offensive touchdown, the solutions are not necessarily on the way, but why we're talking about some of this stuff is like, how do they go about fixing it in the offseason? And the reality is they've got to figure out 3 of their 5 spots in their line. And as we pivot to some of these other positions, we don't need to get too much into Barkley. I think either he's back or he isn't. And will he be traded at the deadline? I don't see it. It's one spot. They're probably going to have a new running back. But I think the more interesting one to me is what you wrote about for today. Their receivers, they're doing the smart thing and they're getting a long, hard look here at Jalin Hyatt and Wandale Robinson, sort of nudging Isaiah Hodgins to the side and Paris Campbell, who was just kind of a cheapy nothing signing this year.
They're not nudging him. They're shoving him off the plank.
I was wondering what you were going to say. Plank is a good one there. Yeah, there you go. Right. So like Darius Slayton's still playing. He may not be back next year. He essentially got a 1-year deal, but they want to give the young kids a chance at receiver, which makes sense.
Yeah, of course. You know, if I'm them, I absolutely want to look at Jalin Hyatt and Wandale Robinson and see what they have in those two guys. You know, Hyatt's a guy who, you know, with his speed, he's just been tremendously inconsistent so far. But you want to see if that speed can play into being a number one or even a number two receiver, you know, because teams, you know, you used the Eagles as an example a minute ago, and they are an example of they drafted Devontae Smith, but that wasn't enough. They then went and got AJ Brown, and they just now they've gotten Julio Jones, but that's an old.
They kept swinging, right? But, I mean, how many guys did he miss on Howie?
Oh, a ton forever. It took the Eagles forever to find good receivers forever. So you just keep trying and trying and trying. You know, you look at Jalin Hyatt and see what he develops into. And Brian Daboll talked about this today, and it was one of those things. He's really spot on with talking about how, you know, it's a difficult position to just come into the league and be a star. There was a long time, and it's not so much the case anymore, and I think it's because the college game has changed so much. But there was a long time in this league where it was impossible for rookies receivers to have 1,000-yard seasons. Because the learning curve was so sharp for those guys. And it seems like Jalin Hyatt's having, you know, some issues becoming a NFL wide receiver right now. And then I think they kind of view and Wandale Robinson, which this is a point I made today, was you wonder where Cole Beasley fits into this whole thing anymore, if at all, because, you know, if you're going to youth movement, there's, other than him having him there to be a voice in their heads, you know, but Wandale Robinson, I think they would like to develop into that guy who catches first down passes and is a matchup nightmare out of the slot for slot cornerbacks. But they need to see all that. And as when we were talking earlier today at the practice facility, the amazing thing is that Darius Slayton is surviving through all of this, and still the number one Giants receiver, although not really a number one receiver, but the Giants' number one receiver, but still a very competent and good player who can help you in a lot of ways. And one of the ways, you know, I said this to Darius at the start of the season when the captain votes came out, that guy should be a captain. There's no doubt about it in my mind. You know, he's the perfect example of what you want a locker room guy to be. And good for him that going forward, he's going to be the guy who survived out of all this.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll be back next year, but he'll have a role in the NFL. Not bad for a fifth round pick. You look at Hyatt. To me, he was their most fascinating draft pick because the deep threat potential, and that's something this offense needed, presuming they could pass block, which they still can't. That was always the chicken and egg part of it. But also they traded up to get him. I mean, they surrendered what they surrendered a fourth round pick to move up in the third round to take him, right? I think if I recall correctly. And then, you know, you look at how much he's been involved this year. He's got seven catches for 120 yards. Pretty much all that has come, at least the yardage wise, 89 against Arizona. He did have that awesome catch in Buffalo. I can't believe he got his feet in. The Evan Neal penalty. I don't like usually to say like the penalty like negated it, because a lot of times like a penalty causes a big gain or something like that, but not in this case. Evan Neal was like, it had nothing. It was so far away from the play, had nothing to do with why he made that play. It obviously did wipe out the play, but the point being the penalty didn't help him make that catch. However long it was going to be, I forget, but it was a long, nice long catch. The peg was that, you know, he played 56 snaps, which is 73% of the snaps. And you look at his snap percentages before that, from week one to five, it was 36, 21, 32. Then he got 60% of the snaps against Seattle, then 46 in Miami. So this was by far his biggest workload. And I think it's a really intriguing thing here going forward to see if he can turn that into more production. They targeted him four times, three catches, 21 yards. It would have been five targets, four catches for however many. Maybe, what was that, a 40-yard catch or something like that?
Distance, but
so there, you know, yeah. So I think he's an encouraging guy. I think he clearly is not yet there. And so I think this team, people get spoiled, like you said, but like the Justin Jefferson types who come in and dominate, even Odell Beckham with the Giants, who, like, let's be honest, like people thought Odell was going to be a Hall of Famer. Sorry, it's not happening. He was a flash in the pan receiver who had a few great years, and that's it. And that's fine. I mean, he had a nice career, made a lot of money. But I think people saw, the Giants fans especially, were like, wow. Well, by the way, Hyatt's wearing, decided to wear Odell's number. They see an Odell as a rookie receiver, and wow, you know, maybe that can be more common. But as you mentioned, and as Brian Daboll put a little, you know, logical cold water on that, that's hard to do. Really, really hard to do.
Yeah, it is. It is, you know, guys have talked, coaches have talked about it for years, you know. You come in and, you know, I think the biggest thing they talk about is a lot of times, and I think you saw this on Jalen Hyatt's tape, that they would play off him, you know, and give him some cushion. And now in this league, guys are going to just be more physical with you. And you know, the level of competition, and I've heard receivers say it, you know, talk about how, yeah, you know, there'd be two or three games where we'd go up against a guy who was like really an elite cornerback. And then, you know, that's even true in the SEC, where the competition is very high, and certainly a lot of NFL players are produced. But, you know, when Tennessee plays Vanderbilt, I'm sure Jalen Hyatt wasn't really too worried about who was playing cornerback against him.
I knew you were going to pick on Vanderbilt.
Well, they're the obvious choice.
There are some other, like you said, though, the SEC gets this reputation. I covered the SEC. There are some teams that are in the SEC that just literally don't have any NFL players on them.
Or right. Missouri's one. It's not like you're playing against great teams every week. But Vanderbilt, what about that baseball team? Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Tim, who's their coach? Tim something. Couple of national titles. Look, and we were talking about receivers. Let's loop Darren Waller in here, and as we close this out, I don't know what to make of his season so far. So this kind of just ties it all together, because what happened at the end of that Bills game was just so perfectly symbolic of what's been a frustrating season for him. He has no touchdown catches. And everyone knows what happened at the end of the game. Did he get interfered with? Who knows, on the last on time down? Yeah, perhaps, but they're not. Even the Giants DBs the DBs love to debate officiating calls. Dory Jackson, Xavier McKinney basically said straight up when I asked him, officials aren't going to call that on a second straight play, you know, which they didn't say this, but That's why you should perhaps run the ball on an untimed down like that, because, and Mike Florio from PFT did a good thing on it. Like, why wouldn't the defense just keep interfering over and over and over and over and over and on untimed down from the one? What do they have to lose except the game? So the best way to defend that, run the ball. Anyway, they didn't. Waller winds up with 36 yards in that game. He's had two good games, 86 against Miami, 76 against Arizona. Other than that, he's had 43, 21, 20, and 36. He's got no touchdowns. PFF actually has him 12th in the tight end pecking order with I think that those rankings kind of slant more to receiving, which is what he does, his role is anyway. They're committed to him for 2 years at $24 million total, and they gave up a third-round pick to get him. He's going to be he has been able to stay healthy, done some nicks, but he's going to be 32 in mid-September next year.
He's on pace basically right now to have 799 yards for the season.
I guess it's not bad. Maybe I'm being too hard on him. I don't know.
It's not bad, but you see the 1,000-yard seasons, you know, and plus you got to remember that now we've added in a 17th game, as you pointed out earlier, so that it's not nearly as good as the 1,200 yards and 1,145 he had with the Raiders when he really broke out. You know, we're expecting more. The bar was high for him, and it should have been, because, you know, they gave him third round draft choice, a pretty big pick to give up. You know, and I think some of it is based on what we saw in training camp and the preseason. It seemed like him and Daniel Jones had a really good connection. Obviously, the preseason was a very, very, very small sample size, but the training camp wasn't, you know, for going back to OTAs in the spring, it looked like they had a really good connection. And he just, you know, you want to see him take over a game at some point. But, you know, he's been okay, I think, but not the great tight end. He hasn't been Travis Kelce, George Kittle, or any of those guys that, you know, are elite. And he has been that type of guy before, but will he ever be again? I don't know.
I think that's all fair. And I think if you bottom line it, he has not been worth the investment. They gave up a third round pick for him, and they're paying him $24 million over 2 years. To me, he has not been worth that. But we'll see. There's still some time. We can end before we do our pick. Like, we're so, you know, so much like, I don't know if it's doom and gloom. We're just giving you guys a reality situation of where the team stands. And there's certainly reasons to be hopeful. We talked about some young guys who have been hopeful. If you really are looking for a big picture reason to be hopeful about this season, Bob did a great job looking this up. Of the 3 1-5 teams that have started 1-5, gone on to make the playoffs, happened three times in like the NFL history, like since 1970, right? Because when the merger, by the way, I put this in a story from yesterday as sort of B-roll or boilerplate at the bottom about John Mara, you know, let's be honest, somewhat smugly saying he wasn't going to comment to reporters. Okay, fine, whatever. Quite frankly, kind of lame. You know, you're the owner of the team. Answer a few questions about where they're at. But he didn't want to do that. So he typically doesn't talk at this fall meeting, even when they play well. So I guess he didn't really talk last year. I guess he's being consistent. But yeah, I think fans want to hear from him, from the GM, who, you know, GM usually talks at midseason. But that's just my two cents on that. But still got a story out of it. And in that story, the teams being the 1970 Bengals, the year of the merger, they started 1-6. They finished 8-6. Totally different NFL back then. 14 game regular season schedule, four teams in each conference, not six or seven that we're familiar with, made the playoffs. And the league only had 26 teams. So there you go. And then the 2015 Chiefs, Raheem Nunez-Roches was on that team. He talked to the Giants actually about that and addressed them, I think, after the Seattle game, maybe. And they started 1-5. They won 10 in a row, 11-5. That's what the format everyone's familiar with, 32 teams, six in the playoffs. And they actually won a game, unlike the Bengals in 70 who went 0-1. The Chiefs went 1-1. They lost in the divisional round. And the third and last team to start 1-5 or worse, and in this case they did start 1-5 exactly, and make the playoffs, that would be the 2018 Colts. Started 1-5, finished 10-6. They also went 1-1 in the playoffs, losing in the divisional round. So again, there's 17 regular season games now and an extra wild card, so seven teams in the playoffs. So it's hard to compare, but At 1-5, you have a steep hill. At 1-6, you have a steeper hill. And at 1-7, you got, let's be honest, no shot.
even 1-7, you're over the cliff.
Yeah, even if it's a 17th regular, it's not like the schedule went from 16 games to 32 games. So,
no.
I would, if we're doing picks right now, will the Giants make the playoffs? I would put almost my entire life savings, maybe I'll regret this, on them not making the playoffs. So I think that's a safe bet.
I would make the same bet, but I don't have much of a life savings. So,
oh yeah. If anyone wants a house that's 120 years old, my life savings is tied up in that. So there you go. Hey, they play the Commanders, incidentally, by the way, on Sunday. We literally haven't even mentioned the word Commanders once. They're 3-3. The Jets are 3-3, back-to-back winnable home games. We mentioned that kind of at the top. I have not spent a lot of time watching film of the Commanders, quite frankly, but what do you got for a pick?
Well, I actually watched one whole Commanders game because I watched them play the Eagles. They took them to overtime. Ron Rivera should have gone for two after they tied it on, I think it was the last play of regulation. He didn't go for two. He kicked the extra point.
Paddleboat Ron.
They, what's that?
Paddleboat Ron.
Yeah. Right. You know, and then they followed that up with a 40-20 stinker losing to the Bears on a Thursday night. So they're really a tough team to call here. Sam Howell looks great against the Eagles. He looked awful against the Bears. Then he came back and won last week. I'm going to pick the Giants to finally get a win at home, just a win period. I'm going to predict them to win this game, and they're going to get an offensive touchdown as well, maybe even two of them. And I'm going to predict them to win by the same score they won in D.C., last year to really solidify their playoff position, 20-12.
Good pick, low scoring game. On the Sam Howell thing, he's been pressured a lot, right? So Sam Howell has been pressured 101 times. He's been sacked 34 times.
They've allowed more sacks than the Giants, I think.
He's been under pressure on 38% of his dropbacks, Sam Howell. But Daniel Jones has actually been under pressure more. He's been under pressure, I'll tell you right now, 46% of his dropbacks, and the totals are not going to be the same because the guys haven't played the same amount of games, but right. Jones has
sacked 28. I think he's been sacked 28 times.
28. So they both taken a beating, and I think in this game, if you're Wink Martindale and you're Dexter Lawrence and Leonard Williams, you've got to find a way to get home on this guy and Sam Howell and to rattle him and to push him into a mistake or two, and that's the key of winning this game. They're going to need their defense. I don't think Daniel Jones plays, and I think low-scoring Giants win 17, let's say 17-16. How about a last-second Giants field goal to win the game? This time they're in position to kick a game-winning field goal, unlike last week. Let's go 17-16, last-second field goal to put the Giants over the top and get a win at home after getting demolished in their first two home games. Then they get the really intriguing game against the Jets.
All I can think about as you're saying this is watching my story blow up on my computer.
Oh, and the game-winning kick. Yeah, well, that's a tough one because we were talking about this. It's a tough one to write when it's like you got no chance to go to overtime when the game may be like, when you don't have overtime as a safety net. So like at the end of the Bills game, you knew the game was going to be over. So you had to win or lose.
Right.
In a situation where, say, like the game is tied or a team is down by three and is trying to kick the field goal, you potentially have the opportunity to have overtime to write more, whatever. People don't need it, you know. That's how the sausage
is made. They don't care. I was just talking about my own selfish being.
Well, and then one last quick point. Because I'm having like flashbacks to writing these late at night. It's not a very hard job, folks, but like, yeah, like late at night writing, it's tiring, but whatever. It beats digging ditches, as they say. The Giants do have one more primetime game. They're 0-4 in primetime this year. They've lost what, two Sunday night games? They've lost a Thursday and a Monday. So they've got like they've gotten the primetime loss bingo going. They do have another Monday night game. It's in week 14. I think we mentioned this, and we were wrong. I was wrong, actually, when I mentioned this. They do have a week 14 Monday night game against the Packers. And we're like, oh, they're going to get flexed out of that because they can flex Monday night. They're not going to get flexed out of it, almost certainly. And the reason is the game is December 11th, Monday night, week 14, home against the Packers. The reason is that the Jets play at home the day before against the Texans. So literally the only way the NFL can flex the Giants, they're not playing a doubleheader, obviously, at MetLife Stadium on a Sunday. The only way they can flex the Giants out is if they put the Texans and Jets on the Monday night. So that's it. That's the only option. They can't take another game and put it on Monday night and move the Giants to Tuesday or Sunday.
It would, as of right now, that would be the sexier game.
It would. But I think also like the Packers are usually a draw, a national draw. So if they are like got their heads above water, maybe the Texans are just such a blah, you know, team. But look, I mean, C.J. Stroud is playing really well.
C.J. Stroud makes them a little more, more exciting. And D'Amico Ryans is the head coach, kind of makes them a little more attractive too, I think.
What if Rodgers comes back for that game?
then we're playing Sunday at 1 o'clock.
He's been busy having ivermectin injected into his ankle by RFK Jr. So he's going to be ready to roll. I mean, it's only like what, less than 2 months from now, and hey, the guy's been miracle healing. There you go. So we'll see. Anyway,
Jimmy Hoffa comes out from under the MetLife turf every Monday night and rubs his back too.
Oh man. So yeah, we'll put a bow on it there. And thanks everybody for listening. Be sure to rate, review, like, subscribe, all that good stuff, and everywhere you listen to podcasts. And we will be back with you guys next week. We'll do a Tuesday one next week as usual. That got tied up with the owners' meetings yesterday. Wound up being fine because we got a little news on Daniel Jones today. Don't think he plays Sunday, but who knows. So we'll be back with you guys next week. Until then, everybody have a great rest of your week, and enjoy the game this weekend if you are going or if you're not. All right, take care.